some push, and a little pull.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It's the Morning Open, a look at the broader economy as we start the trading day. It's a long haul, but one survey says the economy will pull through. CIT might pull through with a little help from its bondholder friends. And for one kid, the sky is the limit for pulling some legs. Where's Wall Street? S&P 500, 0.6% up right now. Same for the NASDAQ and the Dow. The Dow trading up about 56 points at 8,800 even. Asian markets up today as well. The Hang Seng shot up 3.5%. European stocks are mostly higher as well, more than a percent. Sam Stovall is chief investment strategist at S&P Equity Research. He joins us live from New York. Hi, Sam.
Good morning, Steve.
So we got the tone last week with some positive earnings from the big banks. The earnings parade, of course, continues this week. What are you looking for?
Well, I'm looking that the bar has now been elevated a bit because we had better than expected result from the big banks, from Intel. GE didn't even report numbers that scared people. So I think now the bar is a little bit higher. I think it's going to be important for companies such as Caterpillar, which should be reporting on Tuesday, along with DuPont, United Technologies. These are global firms that are more in the industrial and material spaces that are going to be reliant upon infrastructure spending and just the overall health in the economies to show improved guidance as well as better most recent earnings.
So a better barometer with those reports.
I would think so, yes.
I want to talk a little bit about CIT Group. It lends money to small and mid-sized businesses. It was on the brink of bankruptcy, but reports say they were able to work out this $3 billion private rescue loan. Why should I care about what happens to CIT?
Well, I think it's an interesting comparison between Wall Street and Main Street. Wall Street, while it was paying attention to CIT, was trying to evaluate if CIT is the equivalent to Lehman Brothers, and I think that most investors are saying no, it's not. While it could have a deleterious effect on Main Street because they do lend so much money to small employers and therefore could have a negative impact on the unemployment rate should they go under, I think in general what might be a negative for Main Street might not necessarily be a negative for Wall Street.
All right, Sam Stovall, thanks.
You're welcome.
We do appreciate it. The Troubled Asset Relief Program, or TARP, has doled out more than $300 billion so far to banks. We're getting a better idea of how those banks are using the money. TARP watchdog Neil Borofsky is out with a new report today, and Marketplace's Amy Scott has more.
Borofsky surveyed more than 300 banks that accepted bailout money. Most of them say they've used some of the money to support lending, but they've also used it to help build up capital to protect against losses, pay off debts, and buy failed banks. Borofsky wants the Treasury Department to require banks to report such information, but the Treasury has resisted.
The problem is that it is not possible to say definitively how a particular dollar of a TARP investment has been utilized.
That's banking consultant Bert Ely. He says banks basically have a big pot of cash. Money gets dumped in from lots of sources.
And once the TARP investment gets dumped into that big pot of cash, then you can't track the flows after that.
Borofsky, the TARP watchdog, says his survey proves you can track the flows of money. The Treasury does track lending by bailout recipients. The latest shows that new loans increased slightly in May. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Nothing like a kid with sky-high dreams to keep British aviation on its toes. For 6 months, the 17-year-old who billed himself as Adam Tate claimed to head up a new European airline. He made phone calls to airports and aircraft manufacturers, posing as three different executives from the phony company. But an airline magazine became suspicious and busted the boy's cover. His father says the teen has a form of autism. No charges from police in the case. Listening to the Morning Report for Monday, July 20th, 2009, at marketplace.org. Swine flu could soon be having a big impact on the British economy. An influential report out today says it could take the UK into a severe deflationary slump. From London, Stephen Beard reports.
The report from Ernst & Young says swine flu could lead to a 7.5% fall in Britain's GDP this year. The forecast is based on the British government's own predictions. The health ministry reckons there will be 100,000 new cases of swine flu a day here by next month. Half the population could be infected. So far, the virus has proved relatively mild. Mortality rates are expected to be low. But Ernst & Young says tens of thousands of sick employees won't be able to work. And as people avoid public places, restaurants and similar businesses will see a sharp fall in demand. The World Health Organization isn't any more optimistic. It says the virus is spreading around the globe with unprecedented speed. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
We're going to find out this week if there is value in a name. Starbucks, synonymous for coffee and lattes, is trying something a little different in the branding department. In a few of its Seattle stores, it's getting rid of its name and changing it to reflect the locale rather than the company. From Station KUOW, Liz Jones reports.
The old Starbucks is now called 15th Avenue Coffee and Tea. That name reflects its street location and the company's desire to blend into the neighborhood. It will also offer beer, wine, and live music. Starbucks spokesman Major Cohen says they're going for a more energetic vibe with a European look.
What I hope is that when you experience this, that you clearly know that you've been in a Starbucks because of the coffee and because of the experience. But I hope that you've been surprised and delighted by the way that we presented that experience.
Morningstar analyst RJ Hadavi is surprised to see Starbucks downplay its brand. But he says that brand could also be a liability during the recession, since some view it as premium or expensive.
Sales trends have been sluggish. They've struggled to bring in traffic as the economy has gotten softer. And I look at it really as another way of reconnecting with the consumer.
The company plans to open two more debranded stores in the Seattle area. If they do well, Starbucks says it may take the idea to other cities. In Seattle, I'm Liz Jones for Marketplace.
Three bills working their ways through Congress would reinstate thousands of auto dealerships. GM and Chrysler shut down those dealers as part of the money-saving plans during bankruptcy. But even if the dealerships got permission to reopen, could they get financing in today's credit market? Elisa Roth reports.
Car dealers rely on credit. They borrow money to buy cars from the car makers. They sell the cars, pay back the loans, and start over. But
if you can't get financing, you're done.
Wade Walker owns several dealerships in Vermont, including a Jeep dealership that Chrysler recently shut down. Like most dealers, he borrows money from the finance arms of the car makers, places like GMAC or Toyota Finance. But just because those lenders are part of the same carmaker family doesn't mean they're more likely to give you a loan. Rick Nelson's with the investment bank Stevens Incorporated.
Lenders are looking for well-capitalized, profitable dealers that are going to make good on the financing.
And dealers that were struggling before are unlikely to make the cut.
I don't want to use the word impossible, but it wouldn't be easy for undercapitalized, poorly performing dealers.
Some dealers are doing well, even though the car market is sputtering. Used cars and service departments are still making money. I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Microsoft reports its quarterly earnings later this week, and analysts differ over how the software giant is faring with the recession. Most businesses surveyed recently said they don't plan to upgrade right away to the next version of Windows due out this fall. So what's the outlook for the world's biggest software company? Here's Marketplace senior business correspondent Bob Moon.
New versions of Windows typically boost Microsoft's stock price. It's also won some points with ad experts for its response to those cheeky I'm a Mac ads from rival Apple.
That's supposed to be the Macs. They're kind of popular at this age.
Yes. Oh, these are way more money, dude.
They agree. It's a PC.
But while Microsoft has been trying to spruce up its image, it may have taken its eyes off another key market, mobile operating systems. They're used in compact netbooks and cell phones run by software from competitors such as Google and Apple.
Yep. There's an app for just about anything, only on the iPhone.
At Argus Research, analyst Jackson Turner says bit by bit, Microsoft's been losing operating system market share, and that trend is likely to continue.
Users are getting comfortable with fairly simple operating systems, and I believe that's going to translate into a broader acceptance of operating systems other than Windows.
So much so, Turner contends that he just downgraded Microsoft shares from buy to sell. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
IKEA has always been a popular spot for anyone in search of cheap and stylish furniture. But it has other attractions, too, including a play area called Small Land, where parents can leave their kids for a bit while they shop. At least that's the idea. Attendance, though, is up at Small Land lately, as cash-strapped parents in need of a break take advantage of what amounts to a free babysitting service. Ashley Milne-Tite reports from New York.
IKEA says some of its stores are taking in 10 to 15% more children at Smarland this year. One of those stores is in Brooklyn. Monica Willis is a regular there. She says childcare is expensive, but IKEA makes it easy to deposit her two kids for an hour or so of play without having to pay $15 to $20.
It's a really, really comfortable place to be, you know, and it's safe. The kids love it. There's so much to do in the Small Land ball pit. You can't really go anywhere. It's like an indoor play space and it's free.
It's also supervised. The number of staff members goes up, along with the number of kids they have to watch. Willis's 7-year-old daughter Polly loves it.
You can either play in like a ball pit or this giant shoe, or you can watch a movie.
But while Polly and her brother are plunging into a sea of plastic balls or parked in front of a DVD, their mother's often slumped in a chair just out of sight, reading or making some phone calls free of interruptions.
Do you ever use it as an opportunity to actually shop at IKEA?
With the kids, no. Usually we might buy a few small things while we put them in there, but actually mostly we just go to hang out.
IKEA says if a parent chooses to skip the store's aisles, that's fine. The company says it's glad to introduce people to the IKEA experience. Patricia Powell is a retail consultant. Sitting in the cafeteria at the Brooklyn store, she says IKEA is doing well while other home stores suffer, and it's partly because it offers cheap food and free childcare.
Every retailer now is desperate to provide their customers for a reason to walk in the door and spend money. And IKEA has done exactly that with a relatively little amount of money and investment.
Powell says other retailers with space could benefit by having drop-off play areas.
Especially someone like Target, who is really struggling. I think this kind of service is a great way for Target to kind of increase their value to the kind of customer that they want to reach.
Of course, the kind of customer most stores want to reach is one who stays on the premises, even if they don't buy anything. Monica Willis says she knows one parent who parks her child at Smarland, then sneaks off to shop at a nearby supermarket. In Brooklyn, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
Well, we've been hearing a lot about bank earnings, as I mentioned earlier in this broadcast. For the past week, we're going to get Morgan Stanley numbers Wednesday, and it seems there's been no shortage of positive news coming from those financials. Is it bunk talk or bank talk? Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan joins us this morning. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Steve.
So financial earnings still coming out. What are we expecting?
Well, what I'm expecting is whatever the earnings are from whatever companies to hear all sorts of commentaries from Wall Street about how these earnings show that things are getting better.
But is that the truth?
They may believe it to be the truth. I don't believe it to be the truth.
Why?
Because I look at a lot of these earnings statements and I see things like in the Goldman Sachs statements, for instance, where it says, by the way, commercial property is trouble. You look at the J.P. Morgan earnings, and they're saying, well, gee, we had these write-offs and big losses on mortgages. So depending on whether you think the earnings of these companies matter or what's happening with people and the borrowers matter, you can interpret this any way you choose.
So this is all about sort of finagling the facts.
Well, it's about the word spinning, because a lot of the stuff is ambiguous, and I'm interpreting it my way because that's what I see and that's what I think. But if I were in the Treasury and wanted to have optimism, or I were in the Fed or the White House or on Wall Street where they've never seen anything that's not a reason to buy, I'd say more optimistic things.
But gosh, Alan, if I'm the average listener, I'm asking myself the question, you know, how am I going to get down to the nuts and bolts of what's really going on? Where do I find that information? How do I sort of look through all of this, as you call it, spin?
Well, of course, one way is you just listen to me and assume that I'm completely right about everything. I mean, that works for me, may not work for the listeners. And the other thing is you accept the fact that things are murky, stuff might or might not be starting to turn, And right now, there is no such thing as an objective truth you can find, and you try to muddle through, which is what we've been talking about now on this program for 2 years of, you know, keep your head down, don't get into too much debt, and you'll just try to survive.
And we shall see. Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan joining us this morning. Alan, thanks.
You're welcome, Steve.
Hey, share your thoughts with us at our website, marketplace.org, the online host and blogger Scott Jagow's there, and the scratch pad, marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Have a great Monday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.